Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 468. Wow. It is a crazy month of May, the lusty month of May. I hope you're having a lusty month. And it's crazy how we're barreling through this spring, and we've had hot days and rainstorms and cool nights, and I don't know, everybody's got a sniffle or a cold, and knock on wood, I am trying to stay healthy. It is interesting that every now and again there is a news story that as you continue to tell the story or follow the story two sentences at a time each week, you realize that in depth you have not really looked at what the entirety of the event is. And the story of Bradley Manning and all that has happened with this story since 2010 has definitely been on the ticker tape of our show, so to speak, where we have had news items on Bradley Manning and what's been happening with his case and his holding, and even the WikiLeaks outbreak of the story since 2010. But I have never spent an in-depth conversation about Bradley Manning. Well, Sarah Gubbins, Chicago playwright and lesbian playwright and friend of the Queer Cast, has written a new play for DePaul University, which is playing this week only. And it is called I Am Bradley Manning, and it focuses on the story as we know it so far and as it has continued to unfold about Bradley Manning and what is possibly one of the biggest leaks in U.S. history to our security. At least that's what most people say. So, and he is an openly gay man, openly gay serviceman, and therefore he has been connected to the LGBT community throughout this story. So I'm very excited to have Sarah here with us to talk about who is Bradley Manning, what aspect of him is relevant and affects and impacts us as a community, us as individuals, and us today as Americans. So I'm very excited about that because we've spent no time really in depth on Manning as a man and what his story is and how this all came to be. And also we've got other GLBT news with Kirk Williamson and I. Kirk and I are both going to be hanging on a movie set this week. We will tell you more about it, but Scrooge and Marley is the film that's being shot here in Chicago, and it hopefully will be a new gay classic, holiday classic for the community. And, I will be heading down to the set and doing some filming here in the next week or so. So it's very, very exciting. And also what's going on in the theater scene, some big new shows coming up, very queer shows with title of show. That's actually the title of the show, the musical, and Rent, both big hot new musicals coming to town, and an Austin classic. So lots to do this spring. And I'm heading up to some theater as well this upcoming week, heading up to the north side to Glencoe to see Writers Theater's beautiful production of A Little Night Music. So it's just, wow, it's spring. Spring is here. When is the official first day of summer? Got to find that out, but not right now. Here we go.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Weekend News. New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg's newly released budget includes cuts of $7 million to the city's runaway and homeless youth services and plans to eliminate 160 youth shelter beds. Carl Siciliano, executive director of the Alley 40 Center, which helps LGBT homeless youth, responded in a statement saying Mayor Bloomberg's plan to throw 160 homeless children out of their shelter beds and into the streets is cruel, reckless, and contemptible. These cuts create an even bigger crisis for the LGBT teens, who are thrown out of their homes and forced to endure homelessness on the streets of our city. The LGBT community needs and demands political leaders who will protect our children.
Out Magazine has revealed its Power 50 list for 2012. Apple CEO Tim Cook is number one. The Power Top 50 include in the top 10 Ellen DeGeneres, venture capitalist Peter Thiel, TV producer and director Ryan Murphy, political commentator Rachel Maddow, and talk show host Anderson Cooper.
In Michigan, Principal Denny Starnes of Mount Pleasant's Sacred Heart Academy spoke in front of the student body about the controversial decision to disinvite Dominic Sheehan-Stahl as graduation speaker because he is gay. Sheehan-Stahl, a Sacred Heart alumnus and older brother of a current graduate, was asked last fall to give the keynote address, but that invitation was rescinded.
In Kansas, Eric Bishop, the openly gay 28-year-old son of a former member of the Ku Klux Klan, is planning to run against conservative state representative Jan Pauls in the state's Democratic primary election in August. Despite being a Democrat, Pauls has supported a measure that would allow state residents to opt out of laws that conflict with their religious beliefs, such as laws banning anti-LGBT discrimination.
In Utah, Ogden resident Alex Smith, 18, talked to a packed room about the bullying his boyfriend, Jack Reese, was experiencing, but no one, including Smith, knew that Reese had already taken his own life. Reese is the latest known suicide of a gay teen in northern Utah.
In the wake of the Boy Scouts ousting lesbian Ohio mother Jennifer Tyrell because of her sexual orientation, GLAAD has drawn attention to a 1994 video in which current Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney said, "I support the right of the Boy Scouts of America to decide what it wants to do on that issue. I feel that all people should be able to participate in the Boy Scouts regardless of their sexual orientation." Video of Romney's remarks is available at GLAAD.org/EqualityScouts.
A federal judge has ruled that the conservative group the Hawaii Family Forum can defend Hawaii's anti-gay marriage law in court. In a suit filed last year by a lesbian couple, Hawaii Governor Neil Abercrombie refused to defend the state's constitutional ban on marriage equality. Now, the Hawaii Family Forum has stepped in, represented by the Anti-Gay Alliance Defense Fund.
Tennessee's controversial Don't Say Gay bill is set to die after key GOP sponsor state Representative Joey Hensley said he's decided simply not to bring it up. The legislation, which had earlier been approved by a state house committee, stated no public elementary or middle school shall provide any instruction or material that discusses sexual orientation other than heterosexuality. Last year, the state Senate passed a similar measure, only to fail a final approval by the state house.
The Colorado Senate advanced a ballot resolution that would allow voters to repeal an unenforceable constitutional amendment banning local authorities from passing gay-inclusive non-discrimination laws. Senate Concurrent Resolution 1 would repeal the Anti-Gay Amendment 2, which voters passed in 1992. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled Amendment 2 unconstitutional in 1996.
In a groundbreaking move, the Federal Bureau of Prisons has announced that every federal prison in the U.S. will appoint an LGBT representative to its long-standing affirmative employment program. With the addition of an LGBT rep, each of the more than 120 Bureau of Prison facilities will hold at least one event each year that will educate and inform the staff about LGBT diversity issues.
In Minnesota, transgender woman Cece McDonald has accepted a second-degree manslaughter plea in a case that has attracted national attention. In 2011, McDonald's was at a bar when three people allegedly began hurling racist and transphobic slurs at her. A fight ensued, resulting in one of the men being stabbed to death, and McDonald's was charged with his murder. The plea she accepted would mean almost 3.5 years in prison.
In San Diego, Superior Court Judge Joan Weber ruled that prosecutors in a case involving a group of same-sex marriage activists stepped over the line by dismissing a potential juror because of his sexual orientation. The case focuses on whether six activists unlawfully blocked the operation of the county clerk's office during a protest in August of 2010. Prosecutors disagreed with Weber's ruling, saying the potential juror indicated in a questionnaire that he has protested in support of gay rights issues.
In world news, in Canada, British Columbia Supreme Court Justice Laurel Russell ruled that a lesbian couple must share the 13 tubes of sperm that were being stored in a sperm bank for them. The couple, who have two children together, with each mom giving birth once, used the same sperm donor, with the excess sperm being left in cold storage at the Genesis Fertility Clinic. After their 2006 breakup, one of the women decided to have another baby and asked her ex-wife for permission to use the leftover sperm.
The UK has passed a law allowing convictions for consensual gay sex under currently repealed laws to be erased from citizens' records. The Protection of Freedoms Act, which has been approved by Parliament, also received the approval of the Queen. Although the new measure is too late for famous gay men such as writer Oscar Wilde, thousands of men can apply to the Secretary of State to have their convictions taken off their records.
In entertainment news, fashion design house Betsy Johnson LLC has filed for bankruptcy, and most of its 63 boutiques will close. The company is also expected to lay off 350 staffers. Johnson will remain creative director of the brand, however, and will continue to design for her more moderately priced Betsy Johnson sportswear labels, which Macy sells. The designer, who is 69 years old, will soon start shooting a reality show.
Tony winner Kristen Chenoweth and Emmy winner Jim Parsons announced the nominees for the 66th Annual Tony Awards on May 1st. Once, the musical based on the movie of the same name, got 11 nominations, while two Gershwin musicals, The Gershwin's Porgy and Bess and Nice Work If You Can Get It, earned 10 nominations apiece. The awards will air June 10th. Neil Patrick Harris will again host.
The Ultimate Fighting Championship, or UFC sponsor, Anheuser-Busch, has threatened to pull its advertising if the UFC doesn't persuade its fighters and commentators to tone down some of their homophobic and sexist language. The statement said, Anheuser-Busch embraces diversity and does not condone insensitive and derogatory comments rooted in ethnicity, race, religion, sexual orientation, gender identity, disability, etc.
The daytime soap The Bold and the Beautiful is incorporating a lesbian storyline. In mid-May, it will be revealed that Joanna Johnson's character, Karen Spencer, known to viewers since 1991, has been quietly living as a lesbian for years, married to Danielle, played by daytime Emmy winner Crystal Chappelle. Executive producer head writer Bradley Bell said that the lesbian relationship is a big issue for the Spencer men, and Karen just didn't want any negativity from her brother. Bell also promised some same-sex lip locks.
Promoted as the nation's first drag queen-staffed bar and gaming venue, Drink and Drag held its grand opening in Las Vegas on May 5th. The 22,000-square-foot venue features 12 bowling lanes, billiards, 100-inch projector HD console gaming, interactive gaming chairs, air hockey, tabletop board games, jewel-encrusted chandeliers, drag performances, and more.
Queen Latifah will headline her first Gay Pride Festival May 19th in Long Beach, California. Latifah is currently co-executive producing an all-black remake of the 1989 movie Steel Magnolias for Lifetime Television.
Scarlett Johansson may star in a Broadway revival of Cat on the Hot Tin Roof. Johansson, who won a Tony in 2010 for her work in A View from the Bridge, may co-star alongside Jeremy Renner, who is featured with her in the new film The Avengers.
MGM has offered Julianne Moore the role of the religious fanatic mother in the remake of the 1976 film Carrie. Chloe Moretz from Hugo is set to play the title character, a girl with telepathic powers. Kimberly Pierce of Boys Don't Cry is set to direct.
And the group Catholics in Media Associates has named Modern Family Best Television Program. Modern Family is ABC's hit sitcom that features a same-sex household among its main characters and has been the subject of controversy with more conservative organizations. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
This is Katie Curtis, and you're listening to Windy City Queercast.
Only my eyes are the same.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of May 7th, 2012, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Lifeline Theater continues its 29th season of Big Stories Up Close with Jane Austen's beloved romance, Pride and Prejudice, adapted by Christina Calvet. For tickets to Pride and Prejudice, visit lifelinetheater.com. Pride and Prejudice runs Thursday through Sunday through June 10th.
The celebrated Broadway director David Cromer returns to Chicago with a powerful new production of Jonathan Larson's Tony Award-winning musical, Rent. Produced by About Face Theater and American Theater Company, Rent plays now through June 17th. Chicago Tribune's Chris Jones says it might just be the radical interpretation the show needs. Tickets are available through AboutFaceTheater.com.
The Tony-nominated musical, Title of Show, is now playing at Northlight Theater. This original musical comedy about four friends navigating their way through creative differences and commercial success, the New York Times calls Title of Show catnip for show queens. And the Memphis Flyer raves pretty bleeping good. For tickets to Title of Show, visit northlight.org, playing through June 10th. And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com.
Anyone out there? Bueller? Bueller? Post a comment at windycityqueercast.com.
Home again, home again. One day I know I feel home again. Home again, home again. One day I know I feel strong again. Lift my head. Many times I've been told all this talk will make you old. So I'll close my eyes, look behind, moving on, moving on. So I'll close my eyes.
Bradley Manning is a U.S. Army soldier who was arrested in May of 2010 in Iraq on suspicion of having passed classified material to the whistleblower website WikiLeaks. Manning has continued to be a controversial figure because Manning declared that he had gender identity disorder, whether that be his homosexuality or his transsexuality. He has been viewed as a part of the LGBT community. And now lesbian playwright Sarah Gubbins has written a play called I Am Bradley Manning for the students of DePaul University, exploring the story of Bradley Manning. And we have her here to talk about this man, the controversy, his connection to us as LGBT people, these college students, and what potentially is his connection to all of us. So I'm thrilled to have Sarah on the show with us. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Amy.
How are you?
Thanks for having me.
Oh,
I'm
you're
grand.
Welcome. You're welcome. Now, I know you were here a little while ago. We were talking about you writing the play FML, How Carson McCullers Saved My Life, which was talking about young people, high school, gay high school kids.
Bullying.
And bullying. And we did a little bit of a subsequent story around you when Dan Savage was on our show because he came to town. So, you know, you continue to be exploring topics interesting to our listeners. And so I'm really appreciative that you are here to talk with us in more of an extended way about Bradley Manning, because we have been covering him in our news on the podcast for the past almost 2 years now. But in two sentence sound bites. So who is Bradley Manning to you?
You know, I mean, that's not to be opaque about it, but, like, you know, that's the investigation of the play. And, you know, it's a good, good question. And it's really hard to ascertain who somebody is when they've been, you know, they haven't been given a platform for the last, you know, I guess it's, we're almost on a year. We're almost on the 2-year anniversary of his arrest. Mm-hmm. He's been in solitary confinement and really has had no public platform to kind of discuss why he did what he did in the WikiLeaks arena.
But tell me the facts of him. He's very young. He was born in 87. He's 25 years old. He's a young man.
Yeah, he's a young man, private first class, and he grew up in rural Oklahoma. His mother was Welsh, and when his parents split, he moved back to Wales with his mother and was there, I think, you know, in his high school years. Mm-hmm. And she struggled with mental illness, and so he had to move back to the States and move back in with his father, which by many accounts was a very difficult relationship that he has.
What do you mean by
and
that?
He didn't come out. I don't know when he came out exactly, but by the time he was when he had moved back to Oklahoma, mm-hmm. he confronted his father and told his father that he was gay, and mm-hmm. That was. It seems to me, you know, and this is based on news stories that I've read, and there's been a short kind of 60-minute documentary about him, and it seems that he, at that point, left the house and was having, you know, just wasn't getting along with his father and his father's new wife, and he kind of drifted around, didn't know what to do. Picked up a couple of jobs. He was always very good with computers and coding, and basically ended up kind of finding his way into the Army as kind of a last resort. Hmm. Very small in stature, and but he became an intelligent. You know, he was assigned, you know, intelligence analyst, and so. At the time of his enlistment, that was a position that was sorely needed, and there's a lot of allegations now, and just kind of suspicions about whether or not you know, some of his superior officers should have okayed his deployment to Iraq just because he was struggling so much in. During basic training and struggling so much in the military culture.
What are those struggles? What did they manifest, or how did those struggles manifest for him?
You know, I mean, this is the stuff that I've read has been a lot of he say she say, so I'm just careful about it. But he suffered from depression. He suffered. He had outbursts of, you know, anger and just. Really was a volatile presence in the barracks, mm-hmm. and didn't get along with his superior officers. But all the while, I mean, he is pretty openly gay without being openly gay in the military. So, mm-hmm. I mean, on his Facebook page, he talks about boyfriends. You know, he's you don't have to look too far to kind of see where he's self-identified. And then he gets deployed, and he's deployed not very long. And you know, it's a very strenuous atmosphere for him. He's doing intelligence analyst, so he's not in, you know, he's not in firefights. But he's spending day after day after day in a very small kind of computer server room, going through what seems to be, you know, security documents, and so again, his isolation just kind of increases, and what ends up happening is he kind of followed WikiLeaks. He'd heard of WikiLeaks, of course, and being in that having that interest in computers and in hacker culture, it wasn't until the WikiLeaks published the 9/11 pager messages mm-hmm. that he started thinking about potentially getting in touch with WikiLeaks and basically allegedly leaking some of the intelligence that he had access to.
So for people who don't know, WikiLeaks, what is their MO?
Well, their MO is, you know, was founded and started by a guy named Julian Assange, who's Australian, and their MO is to publish documents that have been in some ways suppressed by kind of corrupt forces. And basically their philosophy is that if the information should be free first and foremost, and that the level of transparency that exists in most institutions, governments, and organizations is prohibitive to a conscious society, prohibits them from making informed decisions about the organizations and, you know, governments in which they are either physically participating in or, you know, culturally participating in. And so basically their idea is, you know, and it's, we're going to provide this platform, which is this website, whereby many classified documents are published. Mm-hmm. And it's the hope that then, you know, the public will take action in some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, there are some criteria for what gets published. It's not a sensationalist magazine that's going to, you know, like a sensationalist magazine would, you know, publish, I don't know, what you ate at Applebee's and who you were with. And, you know, so it's only to really illustrate kind of events of malfeasance or irresponsibility that are occurring in institutions or governments.
So how did he get linked to this leak, and what was kind of, when did it all blow up for him?
That's the million-dollar question. The million-dollar question is, A, did he, Bradley Manning, was he responsible for what looks like the largest intelligence leak in U.S. history? Is he acting alone?
Mm-hmm.
When did these leaks occur? And you know, some of that stuff that's the content of the trial. But what forced his arrest? Let's just start there. Was on May 21st, 2010, allegedly after he had leaked the majority of what was going to be known as the Iraqi war logs, the Afghanistan war logs, the Gitmo files, and what the New York Times called Cablegate, which is the U.S. diplomats' cables. Mm-hmm. So all of that allegedly has already been done and delivered to WikiLeaks. Bradley Manning gets involved in an IM chat with a pretty famous hacker by a guy named Adrian Lamo. And Manning confesses to Lamo mm-hmm. what he's done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the source of where I stepped in as a dramatist, is trying to figure out, A, what is that about, you know, mm-hmm. and what kind of mental state and emotional state and, you know, must you be in to kind of basically confess all of this. So I find that the relationship between those two men very interesting. And Lamo, during the chats, was very interested in what Manning had access to and what he might have leaked. And they kind of strike up a relationship, an IM relationship. And mm-hmm. Then Lamo went to the feds and reported and handed over the chats. Mm. Lamo has kind of gotten tangled up with the feds before because of his own past hacker actions.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing that was, you know, a military secret, but he hacked into the New York Times and Yahoo and mm-hmm. a bunch of other places. So anyway, so that's how the feds then, you know, obviously report to the Army that there's been this security breach. Mm-hmm. And Manning's arrested and held in Iraq for, and then transferred back to Guantanamo. And that started, that's when the very public campaign started of his, you know, alleged mistreatment in the brig. And
how was he held? I mean, describe what you know about his.
Well, he was held in solitary confinement, and he was held in solitary confinement for what was going on over 8 months, and was, you know, not permit. Then there was the army was saying that, or the military was saying rather, that he was a suicide threat, and so he lost clothing privileges. He was waked every hour and had to, reply in the affirmative. So there was allegations of sleep deprivation, forced nudity. He was totally divorced from any kind of outside contact except for his representation. And he was allowed an hour of exercise a day, which really was him walking around shackled, like a room that's probably the size of like 12 by 10. Mm-hmm. So he wasn't even permitted out, you know, outside air. Mm-hmm. And so that's where some of the rumblings of, that's where some of the loudest, support for Manning was kind of, from my estimation, came out of what was the military's mistreatment of him. Mm-hmm. He was then transferred to Leavenworth, which is supposedly a little bit nicer if you're going to be in an army brig. And he was allowed access to reading material. But one of his very good friends, this guy named David House, you know, was the one who was kind of reporting and saying, you know, his mental state is deteriorating. He's not able to focus on conversation. So there's real fear that this incarceration is, you know, killing the man and destroying him. Now, there's also huge support for what he ended up leaking. And there are a lot of people that think he's a hero. And mm-hmm. even in the chats, he talks about the reasons that he did this, the reasons that he had to tell the world what was happening in this war, were from the vantage point of, I don't want to say altruistic, but it was behaving, what he would say, in a super patriotic manner that was standing up in defiance of an unjust, wrong war. And allegedly, you know, he went through channels to try to, you know, report different military actions that had happened, and was just told to bury stuff and not to worry about it. And so I don't want to get too, you know, that's kind of the large piece. And it's so the question of who is Bradley Manning? Is he a traitor or is he a patriot? You know, is he, enmeshed in all of this, and especially in that chat that he had with Lama where he confessed, he talks about, you know, his coming to terms with his gender identity disorder and mm-hmm. why he can't wait to leave the army. And he was in the process of getting dismissed when he kind of, it, with the hopes of transitioning. Mm-hmm. So that's very real that mm-hmm. he's, or very real in terms of his own language around that, and that he wanted to pursue a sex change. Mm-hmm. So that is all happening while he's, you know, leaking these documents, and then ultimately confessing all these things in a chat with somebody he's never met, mm-hmm. who he knows solely by reputation. And I just think that that's a very complicated figure. Mm-hmm. And obviously, the outcome, which is what's being argued, you know, the outcome of his actions, what effect that had on U.S. policy, what effect that had on a deceleration of the war, what effect the leaked cables had on the Arab Spring that happened. You know, people come down on both sides in discussing this. And mm-hmm. But I, you know, my own assessment is it had a huge, it, I mean, it had a profound effect on foreign policy and you know, the events that transpired over the 2 years since WikiLeaks made all of that intelligence public.
So does it fall along party lines at all with how people view him, or is it more complicated than that?
It's much more complicated than that. I mean, I would say I have never, I didn't, let me put it this way. I can't think of one Republican that was rushing to Bradley Manning's support, but, they're, you know, Joe Lieberman being one of the loudest voices in calling for, you know, the full use of power to execute Bradley Manning. So, and there's just a lot of, there's a lot of Democrats that, you know, Hillary Clinton, Obama, who, of course, are treating him as if he was a traitor of our intelligence, and in many ways he was. So no, I mean, there's not a resounding, this is a Republican, Democratic divide. There's a pacifist divide, you know, mm-hmm. and I don't even want to say gay rights divide, because I've talked to a lot of, you know, many, many gay rights advocates that don't support, what Manning did. And then there's individuals like Daniel Ellsberg, who was the journalist that leaked the Pentagon Papers, that think Bradley Manning is, a contemporary hero, mm-hmm. and stood up and did something, you know, and risked his life to do something that he believed in.
What was the spark for you in writing this play, Sarah? I mean, obviously it's rich source, you know, source material, but you have primarily written from fictional stories and characters that have been, you know, created and harvested from your imagination. Mm-hmm. This is obviously fertile ground of real life, reality, real players. Why did you start writing this play, and how much of what you started writing and has come about to be this play is from a fictionalized world, and how much of it are you using real source materials?
Well, I can say that, you know, this is definitely the most kind of docudrama theater that I've ever done. I was commissioned by DePaul University to write specifically a play for their graduating MFA class of actors. Mm-hmm. And that meant that the only stipulations they had on the project was that it be a play that had an ensemble of 10, and that the 10 could get equally represented and have some meaty stage time. So when I heard that, I felt like this play, this topic, and even in this discussion, you know, you can hear it's so complicated, and I felt like this is a gift. In terms of, I have this large ensemble, and we can really dive into a lot of different aspects of this material. But on top of that, you know, I was really, I guess the spark was just the question of, does this matter? And did what Bradley Manning did, has it had any effect on our individual lives? So let's just assume that you think what Bradley Manning did was kind of a patriotic event, mm-hmm. or how has that actually affected me, Sarah Govins, who lives in, you know, St. Paul, and you know, goes about my days writing plays, or how does it affect us, and how does it affect us specifically as theater makers? So in the play, there's a troupe of actors who have just graduated from a conservatory in theater in Chicago, and they want to devise a play. And so they set about investigating. They actually start off with one idea, and then it changes midstream mm-hmm. when they intersect with the WikiLeaks story. Mm-hmm. So basically what they are doing is they're trying to investigate questions of, like, you know, how do we know when we're making authentic good art? Mm-hmm. Who decides that? And wedged in there is this exploration of Bradley Manning and who he is. And I do use the chat that I talked to you about between Adrian Lamo and Bradley Manning, which were the cause of his arrest. Mm-hmm. Those were published in their entirety by Wired magazine. Mm-hmm. And so those are represented in you know, not the entire chat, but portions of that chat are represented on stage. So I think that's the only bit of actual source material that mm-hmm. made its way into the play. The rest of it is kind of a conglomeration of my own lens in terms of research. Mm-hmm. But there are you know, real characters like Julian Assange and in the play. Mm-hmm. So
in terms of, you know, your career, I mean, the GLBT experience the basis of GLBT stories has really been a root of many, mm-hmm. many, if not most of your plays. I mean, obviously comedically used in Fair Use, that was done in the Steppenwolf First Look. We mentioned mm-hmm. already FML, a part of the Steppenwolf outreach to high school
yeah.
students.
And the kid thing, right, as well,
yeah. which deals with, you know, gays, lesbians becoming parents. Do you think you're filling a gap in theater about the GLBT experience? And do you feel a responsibility to tell our stories on stage through this medium?
Yeah, I feel a great responsibility, because I feel like our stories are so underrepresented that you know, I feel a lot of pressure, actually, when you do put those stories or those individuals on stage. Even though they're only my invention, they end up standing for a lot more. Mm-hmm. And I always want to say, you know, like, I'm not the mouthpiece for every lesbian, but at the same time, there are truths of my experience that are shared. And so I take that very seriously. But I also, yeah, I, you know, is there a gap? Absolutely. I mean, it's shocking to me, how the scarcity of, especially the representation of gay women, and it's just, so I feel very humbled by it, but also I'm kind of surprised that there aren't more plays that are about, you know, that don't represent our community that way. Mm-hmm. I don't know, and the critique that I hear, which I actually know is wrong now, but the critique that I hear is that people aren't interested. You know, it's just such a small, you know, they're not going to, larger audiences aren't going to be interested in stories of lesbians or of, you know, gay culture, but predominantly lesbians. And that's just, it's just wrong. I mean,
yeah,
it's like saying, you know, don't write a play about Amish because people aren't interested in the Amish. That's ridiculous. It's stories about human experience, or stories about, like, why we do what we do, or stories about, like, what it means to be a part of our society at this moment. Mm-hmm. Our interest, that's a universal interest. Mm-hmm. And if they're interested in theater, you know, then you go to the theater to experience that, or to question that, to be engaged in those dilemmas, then it doesn't matter if that's through a character of a lesbian, or if a lesbian is struggling with something that maybe straight people don't experience. I just think that's such a narrow critique, and it's a narrow view, and it's a very poor excuse to to keep those voices out of the theater.
Mm-hmm. Well, I am glad that you are adding your voice to it, because We're looking
thank you,
for
Amy
the
Matheny.
Anthology of Sarah Gubbins plays coming out soon. Let me tell you, it's soon around the corner. And hey, if you're in the Chicago,
next play is going to be about football players. I don't know.
I don't know.
I have
something
no idea.
Like that.
Make some
of them lesbian. I would just like it. If you're in the Chicago area, you can get to the Chicago area this week. The Theater School at DePaul University presents this world premiere of I Am Bradley Manning by Sarah Gubbins, directed by Jeff Button. It's running May 9th through Sunday, May 13th only at DePaul's historic Merle Ruskin Theater. If you'd like information or tickets, we will have that website linked in our show notes, but you can also go to Theater School, that's theater with an R-E, theaterschool.depaul.edu for tickets or information. You can also call for tickets at 773-922-1999. It's very affordable. Tickets around $15 and cheaper for students. So really interesting story and project. And I am sure the students and Sarah would love your feedback. So head on out this week, May 9th through 13th only, to see I Am Bradley Manning. Sarah, thanks so much. Break legs, and we'll see you at the show.
Thanks so much, Amy. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Got something to say? Call us today, 312-21-BE-GAY. Well, everybody, I hope you have a wonderful May week and that you are enjoying the sunshine and the outdoors and all things to do with the last days of spring as we are about to launch into Pride Month very, very soon. And I want to know if you're living healthy. Do you feel like you have a healthy lifestyle? Most people would say that GLBT people don't have a healthy lifestyle, I think, but we smoke more, we drink more, we possibly are seen as being more reckless sexually with our bodies. But is that true? We are also seen as being fit, gay men with the Adonis complex, lesbian women stereotypically very involved in sports and athletics. You know, what is the truth about our healthy lifestyles? We're going to be looking at that in upcoming weeks. And guys, hold on to your hats. Mitchell Fain is soon back with us, and I can't wait to have him on the show and hear all about his escapades, as Janet Jackson would say, on his big cruise ship boat tour with Second City. So Mitchell Fain coming back to us very, very soon. I can't wait. And Gay Idol continues to rock on. It is really gaining momentum, folks, and events coming up this week that you should try to attend if at all possible. We will have events going on this Thursday at DS Tequila on May 10th and Spin next Monday, May 14th. So DS Tequila, Spin, and then The Call right around the corner. So it's all heading us to those big semifinals and finals at Sidetrack in June. So get on out and sing, or if you know somebody who should be the next Windy City Gay Idol, make sure you get them to an event to sing and possibly win and compete. All right, everybody, have a great week. Talk to you next time. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.